On today's episode of Bill and Frank's Guilt Free Pleasures, we attempt to do a short episode, but we just can't stop talking about the Karate Rock universe.
We also can't stop talking about the classic Spanish novel Don Quixote.
And we know it's not Don Quixote, so please keep listening as we talk through and analyze Peter Cetera's Gloria Love from the Karate Kid Part 2 soundtrack and from Solitude Solitaire, his second solo album.
As a part of Movie March Madness Month, or whatever we're calling it these days, we have a first on Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures. It's a paradoxical first in the sense that this is the second time that we're talking about the Karate Rock universe. So it's a first, but a second.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yes, you're right. It isn't possibly a last unless there was a Karate Kid 3, Rocky 5 combo.
Well, they're both terrible movies, so I think there is a correlation there.
There is, yeah. They're both headed towards disaster.
Yeah, absolutely.
So today's song is a big, big, big one.
And this is one that we've kind of danced around for years.
Yeah, I don't feel that we were confident enough to do this song.
I still don't feel confident enough to do this song.
Oh, we got this, Frank.
Do we?
Yeah, we got this.
Okay, good. I'm glad one of us understands. But today we're talking about Glory of Love by Peter Cetera.
This song has been requested several times by listeners.
And several times by me at weddings.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I know it means a lot to the man who wrote our theme music for our show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ian McGlynn is a big Peter Cetera fan.
Yeah, so I know he's listening, and this one's for you. And also, this is a huge one for my brother.
Okay.
Yeah, Glory of Love is like his ultimate song. And I framed my best man speech for his wedding around the song.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, Dave, this one's for you, too.
There a skit involving a lot of castles and knights, or no?
In the extended version, yes. There was a whole entire community theater play I wanted to do.
But that's fantastic.
Yeah, they cut me off. Okay, so Karate Rock Universe, do we get to that yet, or should we just talk about the song and then just sort of surprise the listeners with what we found out?
They're already on the edge of their seats right now with the information that this is involved in the Karate Rock universe.
Right.
But yeah, let's go through a bit of the history of the song and how it came about, and then we'll ease them in
right
to the universe.
Okay. So Peter Cetera's second solo album is called Solitude Solitaire, which, as Tom Bryhan has said in an article, is one of the most hilarious titles to a solo album.
Yeah.
I still don't get it. Why would you call it Solitude / Solitaire? Unless you're just trying to save money on a French pressing of it.
That's
pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Okay. So it's a second solo album, but really his first solo album as a solo artist without Annette.
Yeah, without Chicago.
That's right. He got kind of kicked out of Chicago.
He kind of was asked to leave, but he also kind of wanted to leave anyways.
Right. So we have covered Chicago's acrimonious relationship with Peter Cetera before. We'll still touch on it here.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Peter Cetera and Amy Grant's single, the second one that was on this album.
Yeah, that's the next single that came out after Glory of Love.
But this was the first one.
Yeah.
And so Peter Cetera had done a solo album called Peter Cetera in 81. He blames the record company for it not working. He felt that they squashed it because they wanted Chicago to do really well.
Did you listen to that album?
I did.
Was he right? Was the record company in the wrong, or was he in the wrong for releasing a bad album?
It wasn't the greatest album ever. There is potential in some of the songs, but none of them are hits.
Ah, gotcha.
And I think it's tough for artists like maybe like Peter Cetera to recognize this. There isn't a Hard to Say I'm Sorry. There's not a You're the Inspiration or Hard Habit to Break or all these other songs that are iconic.
Yeah.
There's a couple pretty good songs, but if you're a record company, they're not just going to throw this out there in competition too with
Yeah, Chicago. Exactly. They're not going to throw out a song that's like, ah, this is pretty good. Let's, you know, see if it sticks.
So it's worth listening to. I was surprised. I thought it'd be terrible, but it was actually pretty good.
Oh, okay.
And one of the songs called On the Line is a B-side to Gloria Love. And
yes,
it, and
okay.
And it was a song that jumped out at me when I listened to it.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. What leads to Peter Cetera getting to this place is the Chicago story, where they're kind of on the downslope
yeah.
as a band, and they bring in the young, hungry producer, David Foster, for Chicago 16.
And the next three albums, so the David Foster trilogy, essentially, with yeah. Chicago,
yeah.
is where David Foster and Peter Cetera foster a relationship together.
That's right. So that's well done. 16 and 17 is where they start working together. Almost at the expense of the rest of the members of Chicago.
Yeah.
So David Foster would just say to the poor guys, James Pankow being the most angry, I think, of the bunch.
Yeah.
Would say, hey, why don't you just play that note on the horn? Okay, you can go home for the day. Yeah. Right? Just so David Foster was kind of guiding it, but he did make an album that saved Chicago.
Yeah.
Those,
oh, absolutely.
Those two, especially, 16 and 17, were the ones that kind of set Chicago on their career path.
Mm-hmm.
So Hard to Say I'm Sorry is written with Peter Cetera. I think that's the first song they wrote together.
I think so, yeah.
And that's on Chicago 16. That goes to number one. So now Chicago is now relevant again.
Yeah.
Right? And then when Chicago 17 comes out, they're working together now even more. So you got You're the Inspiration,
yep.
Hard Habit to Break, I think is one of them, and there's a bunch of others. And it does really well, sells the most of all the Chicago albums. And that's when Peter Cetera says, I want the Phil Collins deal.
Yeah. Is that when he released his first solo album, or was that after he released
it? After. The first solo album came out before, I think, he worked with Foster.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That does sort of explain why it sounds so different. Peter Cetera, deep inside, wants to be a rocker, but he's a crooner.
Yeah.
And he's a balladeer.
Yeah.
But he really wants to be a warrior.
And that comes up a lot in the imagery of this song.
That's right. In the end, you could sing about fighting and all this, but he's a lover.
We all know what happened when Peter Cetera fights. He gets punched in the jaw and breaks it, and he develops his unique singing style from it.
That's right. That was how he got his superpower, was by taking the punch.
Yeah.
Not winning, but by losing.
He's a pacifist at heart.
That's right. Chicago says, no way, you don't get the Phil Collins deal. You don't get to make your own albums, and then we make albums. We're going on tour right away, and we're going to start recording an album. And he says, goodbye.
Was that before Chicago 18?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Chicago 18's without him.
Okay, but David Foster was still part of that production, correct?
Yes, he was. There's a sense that I get from reading interviews with the Chicago members that they kind of hate David Foster, but they can't totally hate him since he saved their career.
Well, yeah, he made them a lot of money.
Yeah. You want me to hear what... it's James Pankow.
Yeah.
Has some things to say about Peter Cetera and Chicago.
Okay.
So it has to do with Gloria Love. I think you saw that in, did you see it in the Song Facts?
Yeah, in Song Facts. Yeah,
could you read the thing he says, and I'll tell you what he says about David Foster.
James Pankow was in this interview, and this is in 2000. So this is a long time to harbor this sort
resentment.
Of resentment, right? Yeah. His comment is, Peter hated horns. And then Peter went out and made records with horns on them. Look at Glory of Love, the first single he made after he left the band. It's a Chicago production. I mean, come on. Michael Omarshan put a Chicago horn section in there. I might as well have written it myself and played it. There is a horn section, but it's all played on synths, which is what David Foster is all about.
That's right. And we can look at those players on there to find out who actually is playing what we might call a real instrument, and then the synthesizer.
Yeah.
So Robert Lamb, who's kind of like the godfather of Chicago in a sense, like the spiritual head maybe,
mm-hmm.
he weighed in this same interview about David Foster. And talked about how David Foster was hungry, and so were they, to do really well. But he said, David Foster badly, still to this day, wants to be an artist. But he'll never be an artist. So what he does is make records using artists, so that what he does can shine through, using the artists as a synthesizer, if you will. And to me, that's a vicious statement.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of funny. He's a producer, so he produces music,
yeah,
but an artist what creates music?
Creates it, plays it.
So I mean, there's a kind of blurred line in there where I would have thought of David Foster as an artist, because I don't know if Robert Lamb heard of a little movie called St. Elmo's Fire. I mean, it's horrible, but the St. Elmo's Fire theme.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Oh, my. And David Foster wrote it.
Yeah.
Ergo, artist.
But it's also similar to our episode on Delight and taking samples and mixing them together. That's kind of what a producer does, is he takes all the music that is played in the studio and he puts it together in a way that brings the song out, right?
Yeah.
So there is creation in that sense. He sees a bigger picture than everybody else. He brings all of their parts and creates the whole. He creates the forest, not just the trees.
Wow, you are on an eloquent kick today. So that brings us to the origin story of Glory of Love itself.
Yeah.
So we have Peter Cetera on the way out from Chicago. I think he wants out anyways.
I think he did too.
He hates Chicago. He kept saying, oh, it wasn't really that bad of a breakup, but it wasn't like a sweet breakup.
Do you know who says it wasn't that bad of a breakup? Is someone who broke up with someone and is trying to justify it.
Totally. I think, at least from what I've watched in interviews and listened to him speak about Chicago, is that it sounds like he kind of cleaned himself up. So in the 70s, as we said in the Chicago episode, there is a lot of drug use. And Peter Cetera was cleaning himself up. And if you see pictures of him in the 70s, he doesn't look like the Peter Cetera of the 80s. He got in better shape, got his Baja's shirt. And then he was like mountain climbing and stuff by the time this song went to number one.
Oh, okay.
And
so he was literally climbing a mountain as this song was climbing the charts.
Yeah, just like this boxer did before he fought Drago.
It took us that long to bring in the Rocky IV reference.
Yeah, that's right. Wow, I just was holding back. Oh, anyways, I lost myself. But he's writing Glory of Love sometime around the post-Chicago 17. And so there's various stories about what happens here.
Yeah, okay.
So most recently, he said this song, Glory of Love, was written, and it was supposed to be in Rocky IV, but they actually ended up rejecting it. Or that one of the times he said it was actually there was a problem between the record companies. Oh. There's been different stories, but the main story, I think, is that it was rejected, and they picked another Survivor song. They did Hearts on Fire.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So my big question is, and I've seen Rocky IV, I'm going to say 27, 28 times.
Yeah.
I don't understand where it would fit in the movie.
Well, this is going to be the challenge of today's podcast episode.
Okay.
So I got ideas.
Okay. I have an idea too, but I don't know if it's plausible within the Karate Rock universe.
Okay. Well, we got some work to do, don't we?
Yeah.
So here's the official story from way back in the 80s that it wasn't even fully written yet.
Okay.
Okay. So I got the Billboard Book of Number Ones, and in it, it says, while working on the Solitude Solitaire album, Cetera met with Jerry and Bob Greenberg, who were president and executive vice president of this new United Artists company. Now, this makes sense because I thought United Artists was involved in Rocky IV, and they were working on the soundtrack for Karate Kid Part 2. And I love this. He says, initially, it played them a more up-tempo song, like they don't make them like they used to, which is on Solitude Solitaire. Pretty good song.
Yeah, yeah.
And Peter Cetera said, which they liked. I love that because no one's listened to this song ever.
Yeah.
But he has to put in for, listen, I got a rock song. And they liked it. It was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good song, guys.
And they said, we're kind of looking more for a ballad. He goes, well, I got something that's not quite finished. And then here's the story. He's sang them a few bars of it. So I'd love to know what he sang to them. I imagine he goes, I am the man who will fight for your honor. And then we'll take it.
Yeah, that was exactly
it.
Right.
It hadn't been finished. But Cetera struggles with writing lyrics. He's not big on writing songs. He says he'll only write songs if he knows he has an album due, like a student who won't study till the test is coming up.
Yeah.
And he had trouble finishing the song. And so his wife at the time, Diane, helped him finish it. And so he did the same thing where he mumbled out words and she thought he said Glory of Love, but he hadn't. And she wrote in Glory of Love. And so they wrote out the lyrics this way.
Do we have any idea what he thought that he sang?
But
because he was mumbling.
He was mumbling. Right, yeah. So I have some ideas that I'll bring up later. And said, if Glory of Love hadn't been chosen for the soundtrack, he said, no one would have heard it because I wouldn't have put it out as a ballad. I didn't want that to happen.
It was supposed to be a rock song?
Well, this is where I'd call baloney on him, because you don't pick the song. Your record company picks it.
Yeah.
The first song that gets chosen was Glory of Love. And what's the next song that gets picked?
The Next Time I Fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not an up-tempo song.
No.
And then the third one, I think, at least for me, which was in Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, right.
Daddy's Girl.
Yeah, that's right.
Such a good song. Oh, my goodness. It's so moving.
Yeah.
That's about as much of a rocker as Peter Cetera is going to give us anymore. There's the story. Glory Love shoots to number one for 2 weeks in the summer, like August of 86, I believe.
Yeah.
And he told his record company to give him a call when it went to number one.
Wow.
And when he heard it was number one, he was rock climbing, right? He'd been rock climbing. They had to find him. And he's like,
why didn't they just call his cell phone?
Well, that's it. I'm trying to think about how they reached him. Would they just wait at the bottom of the mountain for him to come down?
Peter, it's number one.
I want to think that they're holding like a gold record and shining it in his eyes.
Just blinding him.
This poor guide fell all the way down. Oh, well. So, he's there and Stallone has run past him to film for whatever movie he was making at the time.
Because he's training old school as opposed to Drago, who's training all technology.
Actually, I like to think that Cetera is also training his voice old school.
Yeah, well, by getting punched in the face.
Yeah. I'm thinking while Chicago's in the studio doing their work, Cetera's climbing a mountain and practicing singing while the air is getting thinner.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's just...
And his wife is there writing lyrics down as he's
exactly
moaning things out in low oxygen.
You can't win! So that's the story, but the Rocky IV story intrigues me, because if this is true, and it sounds believable, that when they brought the song to Rocky IV, it's not like they gave a full song, they gave Peter Cetera humming lines, right? It wouldn't have been finished, so he would have been, but he's not singing Glory of Love, he's singing something else.
Yeah.
Here's what I think he's singing. We did it all for the Warrior's Code.
Okay.
Which suits the Apollo Creed Sly Stallone story.
Exactly.
And Ivan Drago's story, which I will argue today.
What part of Drago's story?
We'll bring up later. I don't want to jump in there yet.
As we talk more about the Rocky movie that it was rejected from, as opposed to the Karate Kid movie that it was a part of.
Now, I know we're coming off the last episode where we talked a lot about Rocky III.
Yeah.
Not a lot about Karate Kid. We're going to correct that this week. We will talk Karate Kid II.
But also mostly Rocky III again.
Yes, of course. It is the best of the Rockies. After watching Rocky IV twice this week, which now means I've watched Rocky IV more than Rocky III. All right, where are we going? We're going.
I have no idea.
Oh, yeah. We're going somewhere.
We're rock climbing here.
We're totally rock climbing. Okay, so we now need to talk about, I think, the Oscars, because this was nominated for Best Song in a incredibly competitive year. It's no 1984. But
bonkers this year.
Yeah, give it to us.
So this is part of the 1986 Oscars for Best Song in a Motion Picture.
Right.
The songs in the list are Life in a Looking Glass from That's Life. I don't know that song.
No.
All right.
Who wrote it though?
Henry Mancini.
You're right. So that is a big name.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Mean Green Mother from Outer Space from The Little Shop of Horrors.
Right. Another one where they put a new song into the movie. So they're going to throw that in as an original. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Here we go.
Okay, these are the big three. Somewhere Out There, An American Tale.
Crazy. This is crazy. And I mean, we are going to do this song.
Absolutely, we are. Oh, James Ingram, Linda Ronstadt. Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, no, it's a perfect combo.
So good. Then there's also Glory of Love, Karate Kid Part 2.
Yeah, which is like a perfect song.
And it's good.
So imagine having Somewhere Out There and then Karate Kid, and you have to pick between the two.
Yeah.
This isn't like the... Is it called The Good Son or The Bad Son?
The Good Son.
Where they had to hold Macaulay Culkin. And of course, you're going to drop him for Frodo.
Yeah.
Right? But no, this is different. Okay, now you got these two.
But you think he would drop Frodo because he has the ring and you need to destroy it in the fires of Mount Doom.
If he just put the ring on, she wouldn't even see him, would she?
That's true. So what is she holding on to? It's just empty air there.
Well, I think you could still hang on to him.
You just can't see him.
Yeah, because you could bite his finger off
exactly.
Gollum did.
We're a little all over the place here.
We are. Okay. Yeah, okay. So you got these two you're holding over the cliff.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the one that's holding it is Take My Breath Away from the Top Gun soundtrack.
And I mean, we got to go back to that, that song is perfect and perfect for the movie.
Yes.
Take My Breath Away does work. And it's Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah.
And
Giorgio Moroder.
Yeah. Oh man, now we're going to do Lord of the Rings with this?
I think we do.
I mean, we did an episode already on that song.
Yeah.
Iconic Bill and Frank episode, if I may say so myself.
If you haven't heard it, please download it now. Just download all of our episodes.
Yeah.
We need listeners.
This is a song that's going to win. And I saw a clip from a David Foster concert. This is going to shock Robert Lamb. See, David Foster does concerts. I don't know what you call the type of person who does concerts. Do producers just sit there and do concerts?
No.
Or do artists?
I think Robert Lamb is a little bit of sour grapes.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely sour grapes for all the royalties he's really in. Or does he not get royalties because producer Tara and David Foster wrote all his songs?
Yeah.
Saturday in the Park, still a good tune.
Well, it's a great song.
Yeah, yeah. 6 or 24 or half a dozen?
Yeah, some one of those songs.
25 or 6 to 4?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Working 9 to 5?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good song.
It's a good song.
Yeah, just terrible title.
Terrible title. So David Foster at this concert that he performed as an artist. He had people singing, of course. He didn't sing, which is probably a good move. He said, had this song been in Top Gun instead of Karate Kid 2, I think it probably would have won. And there's kind of like the crowd kind of laughing.
A little chuckle, yeah.
Yeah, and then part of me is like, oh, David Foster, come on. I think he won sooner or later for a lesser song anyways when the Oscars no longer mattered.
Yeah.
But chill out, man. You've got lots of money. So when he played it at the concert, the song, so when David Foster actually plays this, he put in clips of Top Gun in the background while they sang the song.
Awesome.
So it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So still impossible decisions. It is possible to love all the songs because if we had three kids, we would love them all
equally.
Equally.
Except for one that we liked more than the others.
I think you like one more than the other at certain times.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the famous Billy Graham's mom said, which one do you love the most? Asked about her kids. Goes, the one who's needs me the most, who's the most sick.
That sounds like a cop out to me.
Totally. It was Billy. Come on.
Yeah. You like Billy the most.
Would you pick Top Gun? When I was a kid, I thought that Somewhere Out There should have won. I didn't know Glory of Love was on the nomination list. I would have been stuck.
Yeah, I have a very, very, very soft heart and a very, very, very soft spot in my soft heart for Somewhere Out There.
Impossible decision at the Oscars. It's just too bad Karate Kid Part 2 didn't just come out in 85. I think it would have had it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, perhaps David Foster was onto something there because Top Gun was a bonkers great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Karate Kid 2, I'm not going to lie. I recently watched it. Bit of a stinker.
All right. I also watched it two nights ago.
Yeah. Well, the same night I watched it.
Yeah.
Except not together.
No.
You were somewhere out there.
Yeah. I was, that's right. We both opened the window and sang out.
Yeah.
I loved it. I loved it so
great,
much. It was so
it's
good.
It's great, but it's terrible at the same time.
Well, see, the thing is, I watched Rocky IV the night before, and then I watched Karate Kid 2 the next night. So now Rocky IV, I watched the director's cut, the Drago versus Rocky, and it was fascinating. It was also like revealing in terms of like what you cut and what you keep and what that does to a movie.
Yeah.
So Stallone cut,
there's a lot more of Polly's Robot, the director's cut, wasn't there?
No, he cut the whole thing. No Polly's Robot. So he cut 40 minutes out of the original movie and added 42 minutes.
Really?
So it went from like 91 minutes to 93 minutes or something like that.
That's it, eh? That changes the whole story so dramatically.
It did. It's super efficient and it's missing a whole bunch of things. No relationship with Polly. Polly barely kind of shows up.
Oh, okay.
He's there, but we don't know why he's there.
Yeah.
The kid's out of it. There's more with Rocky's wife.
Okay, with Adrian.
Yeah, and it makes way more sense. She talks way more with him, and she's way more sympathetic.
Yeah.
And she's right. This is stupid, this whole warrior code. They did it all for the warrior code.
She
says the same to Apollo, and Apollo gets better punches in his fight. I know I was talking about Karate Kid Part 2, and I have strayed. So I watched it, but I wasn't sure how I felt. Like, there's things that were better, but the movie didn't hold together like the original did for Rocky IV.
Okay.
And so the next night, I watched Karate Kid Part 2. I got so many notes here, Frank. So I need to go back to my Rocky IV notes, too, to make sense of all this.
Yeah.
But Karate Kid Part 2, I was not expecting to be as moved as I was when I watched it, because when I taught like an ESL class, I remember way back, there would be like refugees who'd come in, and I never knew who was coming in. Like every day would be someone new, but there's like a core group, and we watched The Karate Kid, because it's like fish out of water story, and it kind of sits in really well with sort of the immigrant story. And then I thought, well, watch Karate Kid Part 2. And I'm like, wow, this is way slower. This isn't like Karate Kid 1. So I was expecting that when I watched it 2 nights ago.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I loved the movie. It was so watchable. It moved at a really good pace. And I just liked the exploration of friendship and love.
Did you also love the way that Daniel saved those children from electrocution by whipping the power lines with his belt?
With his belt. What a brilliant move. I'm like, I didn't realize he was brilliant? So smart.
It would still conduct electricity.
It would. It wasn't a rubber belt?
No, I don't think so. Plus, it's wet and raining.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. But he was so brave. And the other guy, whose name is Chosen with a Z, he didn't go out. He was a coward.
Yeah.
Now he was dead to Sato. So I have written here, Karate Kid Part 2 notes. Better examination of friendship compared to Apollo and Rocky. Also, here's the big one. Better examination of manhood. I got more here written.
Okay.
The violence in Karate Kid Part 2 is not glorified. He had no choice because he was stuck in a moat. But
even Mr. Miyagi had to choose to face Sato to save the village.
Yeah, and he never wanted to fight. There was no even sense that he was angry enough that he needed to fight, like in Rocky. Like, no, I need to do this. Yeah. I mean, Rocky's different because his job is a boxer. Mm-hmm. But the understanding is the only way to show yourself as a man is to fight. And the movie in Karate Kid Part 2 is like, no, you never fight. You never fight. And even when Daniel fought at the end, it was like a no choice thing. It was supposed to be a fight to the death too. Yeah. And they just said no.
Then he just honked his nose.
Yeah, he honked his nose. Spoiler alert. So Daniel has to save Kumiko, right? Because she's there. And she gets like knocked out by Chosen.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Badly. That was a bad punch. And that's what interested me in Karate Kid 2. It was like the fighting was so much of an afterthought. And then in Karate Kid 1, the fighting was the whole deal.
Yeah.
Karate Kid 2 is really an exploration of love and friendship.
Now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, the fighting in Karate Kid 1 is John Kreese's will being imposed on his students.
Right.
This was the student going rogue.
Right.
And choosing violence after the master sort of chose forgiveness.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And it is about forgiveness. It's a really good movie.
Okay, I'm starting to rethink it.
Oh, like, good.
Maybe I was looking at it strictly from an acting point of view, because the acting's not great.
But 80s acting. 80s acting. Yeah. 80s acting is so different, too, right? But man, you got to go to Rocky IV. Like, the acting is pretty bad.
Oh, yeah.
Because Stallone as director and screenwriter isn't really interested in the story like he was in Rocky 1.
Oh yeah, Rocky 1 is a great story.
Yeah, but this one, he just wants to move things along, get to his music videos, and he's regretful of it. There's a really good documentary that you can watch on YouTube on the making of the director's cut of Rocky 4.
So when did he make the director's cut?
2021, during the pandemic.
Oh, really?
It's fascinating. So we'll put a link in the show notes to the documentary on it. This is where you have him as a 75 or 76-year-old starting to think about the mistakes he made as a young filmmaker and how he even regrets how he treated Apollo especially.
Oh, really?
It's really interesting.
Oh, cool.
Okay, connections between Karate Kid Part 2, we will get to this song, but Karate Kid Part 2, Rocky 4, both begin with flashbacks.
Yeah, that's
right.
They
tell you the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And then kind of reframe it a little bit.
When Daniel shows up at Mr. Miyagi's place in his wrecked car, oh man, Allie just broke up with me. She's in love with some football guy. I don't even know what she did to my car. And he's like, okay, your high school kid whose first like real girlfriend just broke up with him, and you're really not that torn up about things.
Oh, yeah.
It was just like, we couldn't get Elizabeth Shue for the second one. It's like, all right, this is a throwaway line. This is how we move the plot along.
And similarly to Rocky IV, they interviewed Ralph Macchio recently.
Okay.
And he said, as a young actor, I didn't even think about how Elizabeth Shue would feel about what they did to her character.
Yeah.
That they would just write it off like that.
Yeah.
And so he felt that it was unfair to the character she played in Karate Kid 1 that she would just do this. It's not in keeping with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like, who cares? It's the next movie.
Yeah, exactly.
The real big problem here is Yuki doesn't show up in Karate Kid Part 3.
Yeah.
I don't even want to talk about it. Karate Kid 3 doesn't exist, neither does Rocky 5.
Yeah. No.
Exactly. And Drago versus Rocky, I think, establishes that Rocky 5 doesn't really exist. He somehow loses his money. We don't know how. We don't care. Well, Rocky 5 didn't happen.
It's the IRS, man.
That's true.
And Rocky's financial malfeasance.
Nice callback. Okay. Well, I think we both agree. Glory of Love does fit better in Karate Kid 2. He also claimed that it was tweaked for Karate Kid 2 in interviews.
But okay, so wait, we're talking about the song again.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, yeah. People are following what we're talking about here. Now, tweaking it doesn't make sense if the song hadn't been written yet.
Yeah, exactly,
so
right?
So what's the true story? Did his wife finish the lyrics for him, or did he have a completed song for Rocky IV and then tweaked it for Karate Kid 2? The one that makes sense to me is that Diane had to complete the lyrics because Peter Cetera is notoriously bad at meeting his deadlines.
Yeah.
So
he's just a bad student.
Yeah, he's a bad student, but he's a kid who does really well on the test and betrays all the things you're trying to tell students about what a good student does. He still gets the mark. So he's still humming for Sylvester Stallone, who really is just looking for Eye of the Tiger. So now let's talk Glory of Love. It was played during the date scene in Karate Kid 2. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. And they actually run to a castle in it.
It is.
And there's a castle in the song.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so sweet. The love story is so good in Karate Kid 2 because it feels so innocent. I mean, there's some big problems. One is that Yuki doesn't ever marry, but Miyagi does.
Yes.
That feels unfair.
Yeah.
Sato also doesn't marry.
Yeah.
So, like, this is tough. This love triangle is unrealized.
Mm-hmm.
And then Miyagi's, it's a lot.
It's not equilateral at all.
No.
It's scalene at best.
Nicely done. So, and they all have nephews and nieces. So
right?
So you got Chosen and then you got...
Kamiko.
I was kind of shocked at how well she acted for someone who had never acted before.
Oh, had she never acted
No,
before?
That was her first... time acting.
Wow.
And she's actually Okinawan American.
Oh, okay.
And so she was coming out of LA, and I think her dad is Okinawan, her mom was from the Philippines.
Okay.
So this is like, just kind of get a sense of her look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyways.
Anyways.
Glory of Love.
We talked about this before, how Peter Cetera, or I guess his wife, they write lyrics in hyperbole.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's no half measures.
And it works so well with the scene, the running to the castle, the whole imagery and everything, yeah. And the fun and innocence and playfulness of that date.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Why don't we talk about that producer, not the artist.
Yeah.
Those keys that begin the song. How yes. beautiful it is.
Oh, I know, right?
Da-da-na, da-da-na-na-na. Sounds exactly like
exactly
that.
Exactly like that.
Oh, my goodness. And immediately you hear it, you're there. Do you have the Wikipedia
yes.
entry? Who are the players on this and what are they playing?
So obviously we have Peter Cetera on vocals, Michael O'Martian on keyboards.
Right.
Willie Alexander on the Fairlight CMI, which I'm guessing is some sort of synthesizer.
Yeah, yep. We talked about it, I think, before. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for...
Sorry there.
Yeah. Thanks for showing me up there. Steve Asbill on the PPG Waveterm programming.
This is not voting well for natural instruments.
So. Yeah. Eric Bulling on the synthesizers.
Yeah.
So we have keyboards and three different synthesizers. And then you have Dan Huff on guitars, Paul Liam on drums, and Jeff Picaro on percussion.
Jeff Picaro's from Toto.
Yes, yeah.
And shout out to our good friend Bruce. We're going to do this right. I said it was David Foster playing keys. Now we know he wrote it, but it was Michael O'Martian.
O'Martian, okay.
I know this because on one of my birthdays, Bruce brought us... brought me a gift, showed it to you, but then gave it to me because gift, not your gift. It was my birthday, Frank.
Yeah, I felt a little slighted about that.
It was a Michael O'Martian solo album.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I have it at home.
Oh, so that's awesome.
Yeah, so now O'Martian is the producer for Lionel Richie.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in many other songs, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
What we do see here is that there are guitars and drums and keyboards, but most of this is very synthy.
It's synthy, yeah, absolutely.
And as it should be.
Well, it's mid-80s, right?
Yeah. So we got that beautiful opening. Beautiful. And it sets us all in motion. And now let's go through those lyrics for the first verse. Or maybe it could be two verses. I got it in sections. Yeah, I have
verse one, verse two.
Okay.
Before the first chorus.
This is an 80s thing too, where you do verse one, verse two, and then go chorus. Mm-hmm. Tonight it's very clear, as we're both lying here, there's so many things I want to say. I will always love you. I would never leave you alone.
Tonight it's very clear, as we're both lying here, there's so many things I want to say. I will always love you. I would never leave you.
Okay, well, there is the hyperbole. I will always love you and I will never leave you alone. Yeah. Even if I die.
Yeah.
I will never die.
Even if I'm on fire, I'm going to love you.
I like the simplicity of it. And tonight, it's very clear as we're both lying here. So I'm imagining two lovers in bed. But maybe it's Daniel.
They're just holding hands.
Okay, but they're lying down.
Yeah.
Okay.
All lying right, down, fine. Holding hands.
So it could be Daniel and Kumiko lying down by the castle. Okay.
Just all holding hands, though.
Okay, fine. I also think it could be Rocky and Adrian lying in bed before he leaves for his flight to Russia. Also, I think it could be Miyagi and Yuki as well, because he does promise that he won't leave her anymore. We're not talking about Karate Kid 3. What do you think about that, Frank? What do you think about that first verse? Anything more we can pull out of there? I don't know.
There's not a whole lot to say, right?
Yeah.
There is a sweetness and an innocence about it. Just like you said, the hyperbole is there. We're lying here. I love you so much.
Right.
There's so many things I want to say. And it's just one of those sort of almost innocent, sweet, saccharine moments.
Right. And now Tom Brihan, who wrote for Stereo Gum, says it's like doofus bad boyfriend because the next verse shows you he's a bad guy. Yeah. I don't feel that way, but we'll go to this.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just forget, say things I might regret. It breaks my heart to see you crying. I don't want to lose you. I could never make it alone.
Sometimes I just forget, say things I might regret. It breaks my heart to see you cry.
So that means we got some tension here.
Yeah. In defense of this song, in opposition to Tom Brihan's take on this, I'm not always the best at reading the room.
Mm-hmm.
I say dumb things all the time. And I have gotten myself in a lot of trouble with girls that I've been seeing and stuff like that. So yeah, I oftentimes say things I might regret.
And I would say that too. This is a fallibility of us.
Yeah.
And there is a, do they call it a trope? I got to look up that word. I sometimes don't know what it means. Maybe it's a trope.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think it might be.
Men say stupid things.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Okay. So it's not a trope. It's just a real deal.
Yeah. Have you listened to our podcast? We say dumb things constantly.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Point. So. But
point to Tara here.
Point to Tara. Also, I believe Rocky IV, this is him leaving Adrian. She's maybe crying. Although
I
think she said something she'd regret when she said to him, "You can't win."
Oh, yeah.
And then he said, "Adrian always tells the truth." This comes out clearer in the Rocky Drago version. But I don't think Daniel ever did this to Kumiko. No. However, Miyagi did do some things he regrets. He talked about being stupid because he left without bringing her with him.
Yeah.
And he didn't write her, I don't think.
Yeah.
Strange. Man, he wasted a lot of years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, we agree that this is not a bad boyfriend. This is just a man.
Yeah. This is
or what a person.
Dudes do. Yeah.
And so this leads to that building music.
Oh my goodness. The build to the chorus is bonkers good.
So good. Here it is. I'm the man who will fight for your honor. I'll be the hero you're dreaming of. We'll live forever knowing together that we did it all for the glory of love.
So you've heard what Cetera said about the chorus, right?
I need to hear it again.
Okay. He had an interview with the Chicago Tribune, which is Is that ironic? Because he was in the band Chicago?
He also came from Chicago, too.
Okay, I think it's just coincidental then, isn't it?
Or fitting?
Or fitting, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even though he's living in Idaho, I think, by this point, where he resides. He's lived in Idaho since the 80s.
Why would he live in Idaho if he's a mountain climber?
There's no mountains in Idaho?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I had a moment where I'm like, well, I guess there's Idaho must have mountains. Big ones?
Do potatoes grow on mountains?
Big ones do.
Okay. Those classic mountain potatoes. So, yeah, Cetera said to the Chicago Tribune, basically me, you know, Don Quixote. I think
you did it. I knew you'd miss for now. You had to go there. I knew it. We've waited 2 weeks to do an episode, and you immediately jumped. How did I not see? Okay, sorry. How did I not see it coming is unbelievable to me.
It's really your fault more than mine.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
He says, I think every man sees himself that way. I think that every lady sees that a song as being about looking for the man who's going to die for her honor. I think the secret dream of everyone in the world, man or woman, is to be a fairy tale prince or princess.
It's amazing. It's so sexist, but also so fitting with like 1980s, like masculinity too.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rocky is all about masculinity. All those Rocky movies try to redefine masculinity or define masculinity rather. And the Karate Kid is also doing this, right? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a friend as a man? And all of these sorts of things. It's really interesting. They don't really come to satisfying answers. I mean, certainly Rocky doesn't. I feel Karate Kid gets closer to it.
In Karate Kid 2, yeah, because he has that moment. It's like, live or die, man. And Chosen says, I choose death. And then
he doesn't do it.
He doesn't do it. He just honks his nose.
Yeah.
Because violence isn't the answer.
And they talk about this because it's Okinawa and you see the military planes always around them.
Yeah.
And it is this real interesting reminder of like American maybe imperialism or something like that, even though it was filmed in Hawaii. But it worked because Hawaii has these bases too.
Yeah.
And you have the moment where Daniel talked about how many Americans died in this war.
Yeah.
And then I think Miyagi might have mentioned how many Okinawans died.
Yeah.
And then he just said, people are so stupid. War is so stupid. Man is so stupid sort of thing. I'm like, oh, this is good. This did not come up in Rocky until the speech after the fight where they tried to kill each other in the ring. Great movie. I got to say, I love both of these movies. Rocky IV, I was saying I didn't like, and I just told you, I think off mic here, that I had to rewatch Rocky IV again last night just to prepare myself. But the truth is, I just wanted to watch it again. I am a man who will fight for your honor. I'll be the hero you're dreaming of. We'll live forever knowing together that we did it all for the glory of love. I'm the man who will fight for your honor. I love this, I'll be the hero you're dreaming of. I love the idea that the guy is telling the person he's with. Imagine going out on a date, like, listen, I'll be the hero.
Yeah, that you've been dreaming of.
Oh, man, someone did say this before. His name was Enrique.
Suave? Wait.
No, Iglesias.
He didn't say it before, he said it after, did he?
I'll be your hero, baby? Yeah.
Yeah, he said it after.
Yeah. Do you think he was thinking of this song?
Well, how can you not think about the song constantly?
I'll be your hero, baby. What else? What's the next line?
I don't know.
I will be your hero, baby. I can't think of the Enrique Iglesias, but here it goes. I'll be your hero, baby. I'll be the hero you've been dreaming of. And I love this. We'll live forever knowing together that we did it all for the glory of love. Now, when I was younger, I thought he said he was going to live forever.
Yeah.
But what he meant was, if I read through the sentences, we'll live forever knowing together. So as long as they live, they will know that they did it for the glory of love.
Okay.
But they will not live forever.
Okay, that's one take on it, I guess. Yeah, because it was written initially for Rocky IV, ended up in Karate Kid 2.
Right.
But my comment would be, do you know what movie it could never be written for?
You want me to answer it?
Yeah.
I have this with Elijah where he asks me a question, I answer it, and he just has a fit. that he didn't want me to answer it.
Oh, okay.
You're not going to start crying.
No, I probably won't.
Highlander.
Exactly, because there can only be one. You can't have Will Live Forever because there can only be one.
Yeah.
This is the one movie that this song could not be written for.
That's right, because he had to cut her head off?
Exactly. To experience the quickening.
Okay, I have written here Apollo's Creed, which I thought was very clever. Also, I had this vision of doing redacting. So in biblical studies, which I started my seminary experience in and promptly quit to go into teaching, which is what you do when you've quit everything else. You have nothing else to do. In seminary, they talked about that there was a redactor in a lot of these stories in the Bible.
Yeah.
That someone came in and would either add things or take things away. And so I'm wondering if we could do this with Glory Love and say, okay, is there a sense that there's something underneath this of another earlier story? So when he says, I'm the man who will fight for your honor, I'm wondering, Frank, if Peter Cetera was writing this about a man's love for America, like Apollo Creed talking about fighting for honor.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And to Rocky IV's credit, it sees it as misguided. Even in its original form, it sees it as misguided. You have to look really closely, but in the newer form, it has recognized that we don't fight like this. And yeah. Fighting is stupid.
Oh, fighting's dumb.
Don't you feel really good to be so old that you can't go to war?
Oh, so nice.
If there was a war, I would just move. I'm not letting my kid go to war. Especially, I don't know why they'd send a five-year-old to war, but I'm not letting it happen. Somewhere in there might be something about Rocky IV. It just doesn't work, though. Because it does work for the glory of love. It does work for, like, when you're in love to say these over-the-top things.
Exactly. Especially when you're in love after 4 days in a completely different country where apparently they all speak English and you've gotten over jet lag like that.
It's a good point because I passed out when I even went to Scotland. I was out. I was drooling in the back of a car. I remember waking up like, I think I'm drooling. I'm so tired. I just want to go to sleep. I can't imagine going to Okinawa, but you did go to Japan.
Yeah, I went to Tokyo. Yeah.
How was that first day?
I was terrible. They lost my luggage on the way there, for one thing.
Oh, man.
So I was wearing the same clothes for like 36 straight hours. It was gross.
I'm trying to think about how bad Karate Kid 2 would be if it was just Daniel being a total pain in the neck because he was just grouchy because he didn't get enough sleep.
He's just measuring. Like, Mr. Miyagi, oh, I'm so tired. Why can't I just nap? Why do I have to train?
What was he training for?
I don't know.
All right, okay.
Because Mr. Miyagi told him he was at the beginning that his plan for him was early retirement from karate.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 3?
Yeah. Did I have anything more I needed to...
There's not a whole lot to dig into with these lyrics.
Yeah, yeah. But we can say enough that... Okay, here's what... The 4 days thing that you're saying. This is a lot like a summer camp affair.
Oh, yeah.
So you can do this in a matter of days. You fall in love. There's no one else around. You're a fish out of water. So all you know is this place and she's everything.
Yeah.
And Kimiko seems to be the only person his age in town. Yeah. It's just natural draw.
Exactly. It's, well, this is my only option.
Here we go. Verse 3. You keep me standing tall. You help me through it all. I'm always strong when you're beside me. I've always needed you. I could never make it alone.
That is desperation, but it's all hyperbole, right? And yeah. I can't say that word enough, even though I have zero idea what it really, really means. But that's a desperate man. I have always needed you. I could never make it alone.
I love it. It's classic 80s man, too, where it's like, I'm strong, and I'm so in need of you, or I'm nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's...
You're the only thing that completes me.
That's right. It's a bit of a... I'm just Ken can kind of come in there, too. Like, who am I? I'm just a vulnerable man. I'm a weak man. And so this is like the 80s power ballad where these men with these fantastic perms and haircuts they must have spent so much time on. But they're also these warriors.
Yeah.
But they're also so tender at heart.
Yeah.
They just jump back and forth. And I must say, though, this doesn't fit with Karate Kid 2, but it fits perfectly with the Rocky movies. This is Adrian coming to Russia to be with Stallone.
Yeah. Oh,
and
okay.
This is Adrian in Rocky 3 giving him the speech. Saying,
yes.
You do what you want to do, but, you know, I want you to, well, I guess, oh, actually, what did she say?
I don't know.
Because I can tell you what Rocky IV has. Here's this great moment in Drago versus Rocky. Here we go. He says, I've never asked you to not be a woman. Don't ask me to stop being a man. That is the worst.
That's so stupid.
Oh, it's so dumb.
Oh, it's so day. It's so weird. Whatever it is to be a man.
Anyways, so Adrian, we have Adrian in Rocky 2, tells him to fight to win. Yeah. Rocky 3 tells him to start training, not like a chump anymore.
Yeah.
But in Rocky 4, he trains hard and then just trains a little bit harder.
Once Adrian shows up.
Well, because she can sit on that barrel.
Yeah.
Not a barrel, but what is it? It's like a wagon and he, it's not a wagon.
Yeah, but it's full of rocks and stuff like that, right? And but, she's sitting on it, right?
Yeah.
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 Well, it's like a wheelbarrow almost.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
A cart of sorts.
A cart. That's what I want to say.
Yeah, okay. Those four-letter words are really difficult for you, eh?
Yeah. It's so great to be back together here. All right. And then we have the instrumental break. Kind of. It's not too much of a break, but it goes into dun dun dun.
Well, that build again to
yeah.
the chorus, right?
Oh,
which is
goodness.
Again, that's where the big sentiment is coming from. So you need to build up, you need to put that up on a pedestal. I am the man who is going to fight for your honor. I'm the hero that you've been dreaming of.
Yeah.
That is the glory of love.
And there's these guitar plucks through that just work really well, like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Not like that, bang, and Blaze of Glory,
yeah.
but the bang, bang.
Or the banjo from Deliverance.
I just heard the Ghostbuster theme. That's what I heard you playing, but okay. Deliverance, sure. And then we have the drums kind of going bump, 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 bump. And then we get to Bridge, which we are all about here. Just like a knight in shining armor from a long time ago. Bum, 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 bum.
But this is important that that line comes in because it's not like the current day knights.
It's like
the knights of long time ago when the armor was shiny.
Right. So now it's all rusty.
Yeah.
Just in time, I will save the day, take you to my castle far away. I always felt that was kind of a weird line because, like, what about her family?
But it's all part of the Don Quixote thing.
Yes. Well, tell me more about Don Quixote. Actually, I've never read it, or I don't know Man of La Mancha's about it. Haven't seen that or listened to it either.
I've read half of Don Quixote, actually.
Oh, good for you. Wow.
But I stopped because I was reading it on my commute for a job, and then I got let go from that job. So I just... Too many bad memories. My introduction to Don Quixote is actually from a cartoon in the late 80s, early 90s called Don Coyote. And his sidekick was Sancho Panda, who was an Hispanic panda. They just went on these adventures, quixotic adventures and stuff like
That's
that.
That's fantastic.
Did you never? I watched it on Sunday mornings before I went to like Sunday school.
Okay. I'm going to have to look at this.
Yeah.
I have written here, this is how he feels deep down. This is a strange sort of fantasy that maybe even a man has about, oh, this is what I'm going to be to the woman. And we've grown up enough of like these books about manhood. Like
we grew up in the 80s, Bill. We understand.
Oh, man. Like, there's a book called Wild at Heart that we read. And it was like, this is what a man is. And then the woman's book that went along with it was called Captivated. And like,
oh,
that's like the worst thing.
It was terrible.
And in classic fashion, it's 20 years removed from even this song.
Yeah.
Oh,
man. Exactly, right?
But like, just like a knight in shining armor, I will come and save the day and then take you to my castle. But when he says far away, it's like, wait a sec. Like, unless she's in a bad situation, I hope she has some choice. Does she have a job?
Yeah.
Does she have parents? Are you going to bring the parents with her? Like the entire family
and
gets to live in the
castle? And what's your mode of transportation? Because going far away on...
Horseback.
Double on horseback can be really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Matt, can you do sidecar on the horseback?
Sidecar? Just strap a sidecar onto the side of the horse?
Or do you have to strap like a little pony?
Oh, yeah.
There's something there. Maybe we ought to think about that. And then we get the... I don't think there's much to say about this.
No, this is the most
over the top that a ballad has. I don't know of a more over the top
thing to
say.
I wouldn't hesitate to say that this is even more over the top than a Jim Steinman song.
It is, without the lewdness.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We get that interlude electric guitar right away after the bridge. And then it takes us into that chorus, and then interlude of interludes, the James Pankow, please don't do this to me.
Yeah.
The synth horns.
Here's the horns. But they're all through the song
they
in
are.
The background, but this is where they really pop man. Through.
And to me, I have written here, because this would be a category, but this is the part that brings me joy.
Yeah.
When those horns come in, and then they go back to the chorus, we'll live together, knowing together, we did it all for the glory of love. And then,
we did it all for love.
Dun, dun, dun. And then the synth sort of hits.
Yeah.
And I wrote down synth heaven.
Yes. Here.
There's an extended version of this that just has the bluesy guitar that keeps going. And I'm like, oh, this is terrible. I'm like, no, you're supposed to be moving that thing on the fretboard down. Yeah. Stop it.
On the soundboard.
Yeah.
Just so, fade out.
If you watch Karate Kid 2, the end credits plays the song. And as it's coming to an end, they somehow like loop it just back to the other. But it's like, wait a sec, what did they just do there? It wasn't even a real extended mix. It's like, yeah, we'll just go back a couple bars.
There's too many key grips on this movie. Oh. We need a longer song.
It was so good. Oh, I love the ending. It's so beautiful. Okay, Frank, we've talked a lot about movies, but there's an important film that we need to talk about, the Glory of Love video.
Oh, yes.
Could you talk a bit about your feelings about it?
Considering the importance of this song and my coming around to the movie that it's in, Karate Kid 2, it's a great movie, but it's also a terrible movie. The video is a great song, but a terrible video.
Yeah. It is awful. It's awful.
It's Peter Cetera.
In a dojo.
In a mojo dojo.
Yes. Yeah.
And then there's just scenes of the Karate Kid playing on the different panels as they open and kind of close.
Yeah. And he is doing a very uninspired lip sync with uninspired possible dance moves.
I don't think he blinks through the entire thing.
No.
Very conflicted in saying this. He looks like he's part of a cult.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
He might be a cult leader.
If you look at the single, like the cover for the single.
Yeah.
He looks either like he's dead or he's a cult leader. He's just got his eyes wide open. Like, is he like, what's going on here? And why would anyone take that picture? And when he's looking dead in the eye of the camera, like they should have had him looking to the side.
Away from, yes.
But he's looking right at the camera. And his moves are so weird that I feel like I might be in an infomercial.
I will say, though, that my favorite moment of the video is, I think it's the final course. He does this thing where he frames his face with his hands.
Yeah.
And it's like, I am the man who would fight for your honor, and just this little shimmy
and his
shake.
His hands in the air, and he's kind of like,
oh, it's so, if the whole video was just like that framing, that shimmy shake, then that would be okay. But he just looks creepy.
Blaze of Glory, we talked about, took 3 days to film. This one couldn't have taken more than 15 minutes.
No, they...
There's no way he did more than one take of this, whatever it was he was doing.
It's like, Peter, we have the Mojo Dojo rented for a half hour. We'll get set up. We'll just bang through this, and then boom, we're done.
He's coming in there with his, like, mountain climbing gear, takes it off, does this thing like, I gotta go climb a mountain, and hate Chicago just a bit more.
Wait, the city or the band?
I think the band, but he could hate the city too. It's hard to know with that guy.
Yeah, although to say I'm sorry too.
Yeah, it is hard. I hope one day they'll say sorry to each other.
Exactly.
I don't see it happening. No. He turns 80 this year.
He turns 80?
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah.
Because he's still touring.
No, he's done.
Oh, is he done?
Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry.
Who am I thinking about? I'm thinking about Drake.
Very close. Although I have a feeling Drake might not have the longevity. I don't think he'll be able to climb that mountain.
Well, the good thing is when his song goes to number one, when Drake's climbing the mountain, they can call him on his cell phone.
That's right.
See what I did there?
Yeah, yeah.
Here, let me explain that.
I expect you to answer this pretty quickly.
Okay.
Who else do you think could cover this? There, it's correct. No one could cover this song. No one else should touch this song. If there is ever American Idol again, and they do a Peter Cetera special, it should be 0 seconds long. Because no one does a Peter Cetera special.
Well, that unless episode it's Peter came Cetera. Out, and it didn't exist. Because it was 0 seconds long.
There you go. Correct. Okay. You got any categories there? Before I throw some more at you?
The only thing I could think of in terms of categories is we know that it was written for Rocky IV. It was in Karate Kid 2. It could never be written for The Highlander. But what other movie do you think this song could take a part of?
Okay. All right. All right. I got this. Ready? Okay. I'm going to give you a couple answers here.
Okay.
Gladiator.
Okay, don't see it, but
yeah,
go on.
Yeah, it wouldn't work, but it would be in there. Okay. I think it could have been in Knight's Tale. I've never seen it, but I imagine it would be in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Rob Roy. It would work perfectly in Rob Roy.
Okay.
That's my answer.
That's your answer.
Yeah, because he does fight for her honor.
Yeah, exactly. But there are zero contemporary songs in Rob Roy.
It needed it. Okay. Also, maybe the most satisfying death scene.
Oh yeah, when Tim Roth dies. Oh,
he dies in
yes.
a bad way, yeah, but also a perfect way. We've been waiting all movie. I actually don't want to ever watch that movie again. It was a tough one.
Yeah, it was better than Braveheart.
It was
way better.
Oh, how about this? Okay, Princess Bride.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. I think considering the theme of the other movies, A Knight's Tale, it would work best in that.
Right.
Because they do use contemporary songs like Rock and Roll 2 by Gary Glitter. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, yeah. Hey! Yeah. At least I think it's in it.
Here's another one. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. That Everything I Do, this is not far removed from that at all.
Exactly.
Actually, if anything, I think Everything I Do fits better in Karate Kid 2 or Rocky 4.
Yeah,
and I think this fits better in Robin Hood.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, absolutely. Because they were knights coming back from the Crusades, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Knights were also like really bad, weren't they? Like,
yeah, they were terrible people.
This is why I don't like history. When you read it, like, oh no, that's not what I want to read about.
No, you got to read Don Quixote because knights are good in that. They're very chivalrous.
Right, right. Is he like nuts, Don Quixote?
Yeah, he's bonkers.
Okay, all right.
The term is basically he's spent too much time out in the sun, which is kind of funny, actually. At least the first half that I read, and I really got to pick up that second half one of these days. It is a satire. It is quite funny.
Next category for you. Where would be the best place to hear this song?
Other than a wedding?
Well, I think wedding is a great one.
Yeah.
I have mini putt or roller skating at Prudham's Landing.
But a date.
Yeah. Oh, most
it can
definitely.
Only, yeah. It has to be a date song.
A mini putt date, yeah. Especially. But I like the idea of roller skating, even though there's nothing open around here
for the last
30 years.
Yeah.
But that would have been pretty special.
Yeah.
Had I not been roller skating by myself.
Yeah. Something to be said about the solitude of roller skating by yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's playing like on a boardwalk as you're walking with your best girl eating ice cream.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, that's
right?
Good. That's very good.
Yeah. It is a date song, not a first date song, like a third, fourth, fifth date when the relationship's been established, where you can make those grand claims.
Okay. That's good.
That you're going to live forever.
Yeah, yeah. I will never die.
I will never die.
Did you bring a mixtape to the proceeding?
I think that I did.
I think you did too. All right. Let's do this.
Okay. So it is well known that Peter Cetera left Chicago to start a solo career.
Mm-hmm.
So my mixtape is solo artists who left bands to start solo careers.
Okay, great.
I'm going to start with Belinda Carlisle, who left the Go-Go's with Heaven is a Place on Earth. Steve Perry, who left Journey with Oh Sherry.
What a song.
I know, right? Robbie Williams, who left Take That with Angels.
Good one.
Lionel Richie, who left the Commodores with Stuck on You.
Nice callback.
Yeah. And then I will finish it all off with Steve Winwood, who was in the Spencer Davis Group and Traffic with Back in the High Life again.
Well done. Those are good. Those are very good choices. Belinda Carlisle's a special place. Sooner or later, we're going to be getting better.
Oh, absolutely. Actually, yeah.
Pretty much all those. Yeah, she listed all ones that are most likely coming up.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Mine is more thematic.
Okay.
It's dealing with themes of Karate Kid 2 mostly, maybe a bit of Rocky 4, but
okay.
Karate Kid 2. So it opens Glory Love, of course. Everlasting Love by Howard Jones.
Oh.
Looking for something that matters and goes longer. Then Friends, Michael W. Smith.
Yes.
Second version, the Cynthia version one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not the project version, but the greatest hits version. He did a couple more versions.
He did about 12 versions.
Yeah, never did quite get it.
Yeah.
Then something super on the nose. I don't know if you know this song.
Kid Part 2?
No, it's called Daniel by Bats for Lashes.
Oh, yeah, I know that song.
What
yeah.
a song.
It's and great.
Written about Daniel
yeah.
from Karate Kid.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I forgot yeah. about that song.
And that then transitions into Love is a Battlefield by Pat Benatar.
Nice.
And then it ends with The Warrior Scandal featuring Patti Smyth.
Nice.
Very proud of that one.
That's really good. Well, that's really good.
Yeah, yeah. So there's my mixtape. I've been waiting all week for this.
Good call with the Bat for Lashes,
too. Yeah, yeah. What a song. Well, every time we go into an episode, we sillily say, I think this is going to be a short one.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that this time. I texted you yesterday and said, I think this is going to be a long one.
And you weren't incorrect.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's tough because Rocky IV means so much, Karate Kid 2 means so much, and yeah. the song means so much.
Oh, I know. And you know what? We could have talked so much more about the song or the movies.
Mm-hmm.
This easily could have gone on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But we're just coming back to recording again after about a 2-week break from sitting in the Winchester. And tonight, it's very clear, as we're both talking here, that there's so many things that we want to say.
But
I will always love you. And I will never leave you alone,
all right,
dear listeners.
Oh, thank you. You don't have to point your finger at me when you say that. I was just going to say, I was going to try to stop you, Mike, before you go on. The reason we keep doing this podcast, you know why, Frank? Because we do it all for the glory of love.
You've been listening to Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures. We do it all.